Shortly after the events we've just talking about, the lockout, the great strike and all that kind of thing, where there was a lot of hardship for working people, there was probably a lot of bitterness generated. And I'm sure, like always in these things, the vast bulk of people wanted to get on with their business and get their wages and so on. But then 1916 came, and of course the factory was occupied. Thomas McDonough, yes, McDonough was the one who occupied the factory. And I think I remember reading somewhere, some contemporaneous notes made at the time, that one of the great concerns of the management of the day was the horses. Or, you see, all the deliveries in Dublin were made by horse-drawn wagons. Mm. So there would have been a lot of horses stabled somewhere in the factory compound, and was concerned about them, their welfare and so on. So that must have, I would have thought, again, caused shivers of apprehension. What in God's name is going to happen, you know? So some years, the family didn't take very much interest in local politics as such, one way or the other, but some years later, of course, when 1922 came, the Irish state was founded. And almost immediately, the board of Jacobs made a very major decision that was to have fundamental consequences for the business ever afterwards, which was they decided that at that stage, remember, their business was based, headquartered in Dublin. The Dublin factory was very large. The management were all based in Dublin. And you had this factory in Liverpool, which was growing, servicing part of the British market. But it was responsible to Dublin. It was subordinate to Dublin. It was just a branch. But the company, the board decided in 1922 to split the two businesses, separate them.
Two separate companies?
Two separate companies. They formed W&R Jacob Limited, Dublin, remained in place, and a company called W&R Jacob Liverpool Limited was formed. The original company remained in place. And each person who had a share, it was still a family business, of course, it was not a public company in the modern sense, but for each share you held in the Dublin company, you got one in the Liverpool company as well. So now, two separate companies, joint ownership, similar ownership rather, and not one owned by the other. That was quite significant, was to be quite significant. One was not a subsidiary. You had one share in Dublin there, you got one share in Liverpool and so on.
Yeah.
I say that was quite significant because as the years passed, of course, shares went hither and thither and the ownership composition changed somewhat over the decades that followed, and the companies became more separate. Initially, probably it was all on paper, but the business was still managed. The key people were still in Dublin, the senior people, the chairman, managing director, and so on. But again, it reflected the de facto separation of the two countries, the two economies. Then, the 1920s were very difficult, obviously, because the depression worldwide, etc. Wages were cut. I remember reading once about 1924 or so, the hourly wage rate was reduced. But that wasn't just peculiar to Jacobs, that would have been countrywide. But the next significant development within the Irish state, reflected in Jacobs, came in the early 1930s after Mr. De Valera came to power. And younger people won't remember, but when De Valera came to power in 1932, he certainly increased substantially tariffs on manufactured goods coming into the country with a view to increasing production, manufacture in Ireland. The car assembly industry, for instance, started around that time. the Buckleys, the McCarrans, all these people.
Did that work?
It worked for the following 40 years or so until the late 1960s. It produced a lot of employment, of course. But like so often nowadays, many Irish people would think that was a brainwave of Mr. De Valera's or a particularly Irish thing. It wasn't really. It was a reflection of the reaction of governments across the world to the depression of the 20s and the early 30s. I mean, the 30s were a dreadful decade everywhere. And everywhere, governments were throwing up tariff barriers. So what our own people use, as far as possible, we want to make ourselves. Now, in the Irish context, there were very few people hurt because there was very little manufacturing in that island anyway, apart from Guinness's and Jacobs. But to a company like Jacobs, this was a bit of a disaster because it was the Irish market was of little consequence to them as such. They wanted access to foreign markets.
It affected their exports, of
course. It did, in many cases, yes. And
imports of
biscuits into the country were tariff, but that didn't matter because there weren't any imports anyway. But as the 30s went on, international trading got a lot more difficult. And remember, with the economic war between Britain and Ireland in the 1930s, again, probably didn't help. And probably increased the separation between Liverpool and Dublin, the two biscuit factories, the two companies.